Now let's look at what Timothy Keller talks about in his third chapter of Making Sense of God. The title of the chapter is A Meaning That Suffering Can't Take From You. In this chapter, he asks the question, what's the meaning of life? And he, you know, that's a huge question. Most people ponder that question from time to time. A lot of modern people have said that it's a foolish question, though, that it takes life too seriously. There is no inherent meaning. Just make it mean whatever you feel like, whatever works to make you happy. When you talk about meaning, Keller says there's two ways to understand that word. Meaning could be purpose. Like when you say, did you mean to hurt her like that? What was your purpose in doing that? Or it can mean significance. Like this medal signifies bravery under fire. So when we're talking about meaning, are we talking about purpose or we're talking about significance? It's interesting that in an assisted living facility, one time they did an experiment bringing in these pet animals, you know, for the elderly to take care of and play with and so forth. And they found that it really had a huge impact upon people. It gave them a reason to get up, you know, because they had to feed the animals, they had to take care of them. And that just shows how humans have a fundamental need for a reason to live. Now, various writers over the years have written about the despair they feel upon realizing that all their efforts, all their loves, everything will one day just die and disappear. Let's face it, even the sun will burn out. The universe will die. It's all in vain. That's just the fact of the universe today as we look at it in the natural. Now, Keller says younger cosmopolitan people of today cringe at the notion of meaning, though, and they say it's ridiculous to think about it. It's like God, Mom, and apple pie. It's old. It's an outdated concept no one needs anymore. He says, if the universe is truly indifferent and meaningless, well, why think it ought not to be that way? These folks think if we just stop looking for some great meaning in life and just accept things as they are, we'd be happier. We just need to create meaning for ourselves and be content with that. That actually creates a greater freedom. It's liberating, they say, to realize there is no meaning and you're free to make up your own. Here's a quote. He who seeks meaning finds nothing but contradiction and nonsense. Don't think about the person you want to be. Just be that person. Don't try to find meaning in life. Just create your own meaning. And postmodern people, they think this is liberating. We don't have to seek the great meaning in life. That sort of a concept puts us in bondage, they say. Instead, life can be as meaningful as we make it. So this is the secular view. But Keller asks in this chapter, he says, really? Is this really true? Is this a cogent, consistent position? And does it work out practically in life? Remember, that's what he's doing in this book. He's examining secular worldview, secular beliefs, and putting them to the test to see whether they really work out practically and whether they're really as great as secularists think they are, whether they're really superior to Christian concepts. So he goes into the chapter and he shows us some problems with this postmodern view of meaning. He says, for one thing, postmoderns denounce all absolute values and inherent meanings in the name of freedom. You see, we're freer if we don't have to have meanings. It liberates us to not have meaning, but to be able to create our own meaning. Keller asks, when you do that, aren't you making freedom sort of an absolute? But why is freedom so absolute and important? Why is it unquestionably good? Why is freedom the ultimate, see? And Keller says, who says that freedom is the ultimate? So he's questioning the secular view. Isn't this assuming a value-laden standard by which to judge other standards? And isn't it then actually giving a universal answer to the meaning question, namely that the meaning of life is to have the freedom to determine your own meaning? And if that's true, isn't that doing what postmodernism says shouldn't be done? Isn't it a self-defeating proposition? It shows that this postmodern view is not consistent within itself, doesn't it? I mean, you're saying there are no standards by which to judge, but the greatest thing that we need is freedom. So you're creating freedom as a standard. Isn't determining our own meaning kind of narcissistic also? I mean, if it's all up to us, When do we ever get outside of ourselves? Shouldn't there be something bigger than us, something that challenges us, something that makes us have to adjust to it instead of it adjusting to us? Surely life itself must have a say in the matter. Keller then goes on talking about tigers, but I'd rather talk about bears. He was talking about how, you know, you can think whatever you want about tigers, but they don't care. Well, I saw a documentary about this German guy who went to live among grizzly bears. Maybe you saw that. This guy was really a trip. He thought that he could beam his own thoughts into the grizzly bears' minds. And he thought that he was sort of psyching them out. And he would video himself doing amazing things with bears. I mean, he went right up to grizzly bears and touched them and stuff, and they didn't kill him. So he thought it was working, you know, this thing of psyching out the bears. But he got a bush pilot to leave him and his girlfriend along this lake in Alaska somewhere. And when the bush pilot came back to find him, they were eaten. But he could see the bear was eating them. And so you might say this man really got into bears. Well, let's move on. But the point is, it didn't really matter what the guy thought was going on. Reality was very different from what he thought. And life is different from what we may think or try to make of it. Can't people see this? I mean, you can think whatever you want and say the meaning of life is whatever you make up. But reality is reality, and it's out there to be discovered. Keller talks about a young guy who came to him and wanted to play football, but he was just too small. You know, he just couldn't do it. And so he said, well, Rudy did it. You know, the movie where Rudy played for Notre Dame, and he was too small, but he made it. Yeah, you know, and Keller says, yeah, sometimes there are some exceptions, and Rudy was an exception, and he made it. But, you know, there are some limits that you just have to face. Sometimes you can't be whatever you think you can be. You know, you're just not tall enough to be a basketball player. You can't dunk. You can't do a slam dunk. There are certain limitations in life that cannot be overcome, and the wisest thing is not to fight them, but to recognize them and submit to them. Life isn't simply what you make it. Often, life is what it is. And we have to accept that. I think that's a real profound and important truth, don't you? Is meaning in life without God possible? Christians insist it isn't. Many secularists loudly proclaim it is. Who's right? Can we find meaning in life without any belief in God? Keller says this, and it's good. He says, you know, we need to admit there's truth in both camps. Plenty of people find meaning in their life by, you know, helping inner city youth or getting involved in some political cause or maybe cleaning up the environment, stuff like that. And we don't need to deny that or discount it. Those kind of purposes and meanings they're valid, they're worthwhile. It's perfectly legitimate to involve ourselves in things that are meaningful to us. But here's the thing, the insight in this chapter that Keller brings out, I think is important. He says there really are at least two different kinds of meaning. There is what's called created or assigned meaning. That's something we come up with, like the things I talked about above. But there's also such a thing as discovered or inherent meaning. Created meaning, the kind we make up for ourselves, is not objective. It's subjective. It's within ourselves. It depends on our feelings about it. And Keller argues that discovered or inherent meaning is outside ourselves. It doesn't depend on our feelings. And what he wants to show us in this chapter is that such meaning is more durable, more rational, and more communal than created meaning. Now, why is this so? Well, how is the concept of meaning sustained? Doesn't it have to be attached to something bigger than ourselves? When we look for meaning, we have to ask, what's it all for, don't we? I mean, that's what meaning is about. What's it for? What's the meaning of this? So if you find meaning in taking care of your health, for example, somebody might ask, well, but why are you doing that? Well, I take care of my health so I can live longer and have a better quality of life. Okay, but why are you doing that? What do you want that for? Well, I need to be in better health so I can work and provide and be there for my family. Well, okay, that's good. But what's the point of that? Well, so they'll be happy and have good lives. Okay, but what's the point of that? What difference does it make? And so the Keller's point here is that you can always go deeper and you can always ask more questions. What's that for? And what's that for? And what's that for? And as you go deeper, the answers get harder to come by. If your sense of meaning and purpose is attached to relationships, for example, well, someday all those people you're related to, they'll die. If you're thinking of future generations or the well-being of the planet, well, all those things are going to disappear too. Keller says, we've defined meaning in life as, quote, making a difference, unquote. But from the secular point of view, in the end, the universe gives you a final answer. Hello, nothing makes a difference. A very, very important point. Nothing makes a difference. If this life is all there is and there's no God or life beyond this material world, then nothing really matters in any ultimate sense. Do you know that? Do you realize that? It doesn't matter if you were Mother Teresa or Adolf Hitler, whether you fought hunger in Africa or you were cruel and greedy and you starved the poor. In the end, what you do will make absolutely no difference. Your mightiest efforts will be of no real value. When you die, as Jack London, the author, once said, it'll be no different than when the last mosquito you slapped died. Ultimately, everything we do is radically insignificant. Nothing counts forever, unquote. It's just so true. Postmodern people believe we should train ourselves to not ask the ultimate sort of questions. We must discipline ourselves not to think about the ultimate outcome of all we do, which in the secular worldview is sheer nothingness. We should put these things out of our minds and concentrate only on today. But Keller says this establishes my first point. When secular people seek to lead a meaningful life, they must have discipline to not think so much about the big picture. They must disconnect what their life tells them about the world from what they're experiencing emotionally. That is getting a feeling of meaningfulness through a lack of rationality, by the suppression of thinking and reflection. See, to get a meaningful life, you have to discipline yourself to not think about the big picture. That's what you have to do. Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote to a friend that when he thought about it, he realized that a human life is worth nothing more than a baboon's life, nothing more than a grain of sand. But he went on to say in this letter that whenever he had such thoughts, he'd go downstairs and play solitaire. In other words, he put such things out of his mind because he realized they were the only conclusions his secular worldview could come to, and he just didn't want to accept them. The truth is, no one with a secular kind of mindset can get any peace and meaning for daily life unless he or she stops thinking about the implications of his or her beliefs. The problem is, you know, it's hard to stop thinking, and the big picture may keep breaking in on you. Leo Tolstoy, the Russian writer, was leading a very successful life until around the age of 50, he began to realize that every loved one would be taken from him, and all that he had written would eventually be forgotten. In light of that, he began to ask himself, why should I even live? Why wish for anything or do anything? Is there any meaning to my life that the inevitable death awaiting me does not destroy? And then he asked, how can we fail to see this? That is what is so surprising. So true, you know. Then Keller has this great quote from C.S. Lewis on page 68 of his book. Lewis said this, you might decide to simply have as good a time as possible. The universe is a universe of nonsense, but since you're here, grab what you can. Unfortunately, you can't, even in the lowest animal sense, be in love with a girl if you know and keep on remembering that all the beauties, both of her person and of her character, are a momentary and accidental pattern produced by the collision of atoms, and that your own response to them is only a sort of psychic phosphorescence arising from the behavior of your genes. You can't go on getting very serious pleasure from music if you know and remember that its air of significance is a pure illusion, that you like it only because your nervous system is irrationally conditioned to like it. You may still, in the lowest sense, have a good time, quote unquote, but just insofar as it becomes very good, just insofar as it ever threatens to push you on from cold sensuality into real warmth and enthusiasm and joy, so far will you be forced to feel the hopeless disharmony within your own emotions and the universe in which you think you really live. So our emotions, our feelings about life, are in disharmony with what we really believe if we're total secularists. A secular person, for that reason, has to keep from thinking deeply, because if they do, they'll be depressed, even suicidal, because they don't live in real harmony with what they say they believe. On the other hand, for a Christian, it's just the opposite. If they feel depressed, if we feel depressed, it's because we're not thinking deeply enough. We believe in a God of love who made us and wants us to know him, and he sent his son to restore us, and one day he's going to completely renovate the entire universe. If a Christian is depressed, she or he is simply not thinking deeply enough. But modern people And I've seen this a lot. Modern people have a shallow, temporary peace only because they don't think very deeply about life. If they just thought about their beliefs and how everything is just a cosmic accident and has no meaning and everything is just going to come to an end someday soon and nothing they can do or ever could ever change or make a real difference, they got to be depressed. So Keller, what he's doing here is just trying to show people of secular worldviews where their worldview is deficient. They think that they're superior to Christianity, but their worldview is deficient. And then in the rest of the chapter, he goes on to show why discovered meaning is more communal than created meanings and more durable. I hope you read the book because he has a lot of examples I don't have time to talk about in this brief podcast. But the thing about it is that discovered meaning is something we can all hold on to because it's outside ourselves. It's not as individualistic as created meaning. Understanding discovered meaning is the kind of thing that used to unite our society because everybody understood there were values beyond ourselves, there was something worthwhile beyond our own selves, and so people were willing to sacrifice for that. But since we've left that kind of thing behind, our society is more deeply divided. Everybody's all individualistic. It's just you make your own purpose and so on. Even if you like to take moral positions and you say that meaning in life is that we should help the poor, if you're a real secularist and you don't have God as your basis for everything, your motivation is not absolute. It's not grounded in anything absolute. So you can't even justify what you say is a meaning of life. Or you can't tell other people that they should agree with your meaning in life because you don't have anything absolute out there that you can point to. But if there are absolute meanings out there created by God that are waiting for us to discover instead of just meanings that we make up within our own minds, then those absolutes out there are things we can all believe in and strive for, so they're more communal. They bring us together as a society. Secularism is the only worldview whose members must find their meaning within this life. That's the only worldview. They say this life is all there is, so you got to find meaning in this life. All other ways of understanding say this life is not all there is. And so when suffering or loss comes, we can find meaning beyond it, and we can know that someday it'll be compensated and that sort of thing. Christians have that sort of an understanding. But when this life is all there is, well, things have to go well, because if suffering disrupts this life, that suffering has the power to destroy your very meaning for living. You got nothing else. And Keller refers to a Jewish doctor who survived the death camps of World War II and wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. In it, he told how some people in those death camps kept their humanity through all the horror they were going through. They stayed kind. They stayed strong, while others just succumbed totally to the horror of it. And what this doctor saw as making the difference was the fact that some people, well, he said it's what they saw as the meaning of their lives. Those whose meaning was all in this life had it all swept away from them and they just crumbled. But those who saw meaning beyond this life knew their trials would someday be over and there was a purpose for enduring them and so on. They knew somebody was watching them. They knew God was watching over them. And so they knew that it was worthwhile to live right, even in this horrible situation where they were just going to die soon, because someone was watching him. There was something beyond them. There was something transcendent to life. It wasn't just all about what's here and now. Only religion, and especially Christianity, gives us anything beyond ourselves in which we can rely and to which we can look forward. And so Keller says this, and I agree with it. Secularism is the absolute worst at preparing people for suffering and death because created meaning is not only less rational and communal, it's also less durable. So he ends the chapter saying, look, you know, Christians, it's no good going out and telling secular people, hey, your life has no meaning. Because, you know, we don't want to detract from the meanings that they come up with. It's okay to have the meaning in life that you want to help the disenfranchised or the poor or something like that. Or you have meanings. There are many created meanings that have positive effects, and that's perfectly fine. But what he's trying to say in this chapter is that created meanings are not so wonderful and great as secularists might think they are. They have great weaknesses. And that actually, in comparison with the Christian message, the Christian gospel, they come up short. And the Christian way of life gives us a much better way of looking at things, a much greater meaning in life. So we as Christians can be totally confident in the gospel, what we've received from the Lord. We don't need to be intimidated by anybody, especially not secularists. We have something better, and we need to confidently share that gospel with others. Till next time, I pray that you'll take that to heart, and may the Lord richly bless you.